and welcome to Money Trail with me, Amir Arafat. Today, $500 billion illegal drug trade, major money laundering banks, and Anglo-American Secret Services, the CIA, and MI6.
The global drug trade today is at least a $1 trillion a year multinational business. And it's global in scope. You have areas like Afghanistan, where over 90% of the world's opium and heroin is being produced. It's being processed in laboratories in that area of the world and shipped by various routes, sea routes, overland routes, into primary markets in Europe and in North America. You have the same phenomenon with cocaine being produced largely in South American countries, Colombia, Bolivia, and similarly, it's being processed and distributed through a global distribution network.
Drug trafficking is a global illicit trade involving the cultivation, manufacture, distribution, and sale of substances which are subject to drug prohibition laws. At current levels, world heroin consumption stands at 340 tons, and seizures represent an annual flow of 430 to 450 tons of heroin into the global heroin market. Of that total, opium from Myanmar and the Lao People's Democratic Republic yields some 50 tons, while the rest, some 380 tons of heroin and morphine, is produced exclusively from the Afghan opium.
You have drug trafficking out of South America that has primary markets in the United States and in Europe. You had the opium production in what was called the Golden Triangle of Southeast Asia during the time of the Vietnam War. And some of those opium and heroin proceeds went to financing the Indochina War. When that war ended, the opium production shifted to Afghanistan, and now it's been the major source of funding for the wars that have gone on in Central Asia, in South Asia, for the past 30 years.
The drug capital of the world is not Kabul. It's Washington. It's New York. It's shared capital responsibility. Washington and New York are at the center of global drug trafficking. The major banks are involved. The U.S. government is involved. Other U.S. businesses are involved. The CIA is involved. The global mafia is involved. This is what global drug trafficking is all about.
In 2007 and 2008, cocaine was used by some 16 to 17 million people worldwide. Similar to the number of global opiate users, North America accounted for more than 40% of global cocaine consumption. The total was estimated at around 470 tons. For the North American market, cocaine is typically transported from Colombia to Mexico or Central America by sea, and then onwards by land to the United States and Canada.
The government in Colombia has always been crooked, always been in bed with the CIA. The Four Horsemen of Oil are the only companies that make acetone and ethyl ether, which are necessary to produce cocaine. They import that stuff into Colombia freely, even though U.S. Congress has tried to stop that. They've gotten around it. So all the chemicals necessary to make the cocaine come from U.S. big oil companies. So that basically, in the past, the coca leaf has come out of Bolivia, Peru, different places. Now that Evo Morales is in charge in Bolivia, it's not happening, so they find it somewhere else. But the labs are in Colombia. They're run by the right-wing paramilitaries who are working closely with the Colombian government and the CIA and the oil companies. The oil companies have a huge presence in Colombia. And they're basically using this Plan Colombia, they call it, to fight a covert war against the FARC and the ELN on behalf of the narco-trafficking elite.
All of the funds for this $1 trillion a year multinational business go through the major international banks. And this was made very clear last year when the U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations produced a report on the HSBC. It's an old British bank formerly known as the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, and the U.S. Senate found that HSBC was responsible for laundering somewhere between 60 and 80% of all of the illegal money gained from the global cocaine trafficking, running through banks in Mexico into New York City. So this is an enormous business, and you've got to also consider that there are other criminal enterprises that use the same structure. Illegal trafficking in weapons, illegal trafficking in diamonds, even the white slave trade are all part of a multinational global crime syndicate that has tentacles all over the globe, but ultimately counts on the major international Western banks to handle their finances.
The illegal drug trade and the great powers' involvement in it are nothing new. For a bit of history, let's go all the way to the 19th century. The so-called Opium Wars, imposed on China by the British Empire.
The Opium Wars, also known as the Anglo-Chinese Wars, are divided into the First Opium War from 1839 to 1842, and the Second Opium War from 1856 to 1860. These were the climax of disputes over trade and diplomatic relations between China under the Qing Dynasty and the British Empire.
Well, remember that the British East India Company was the world's biggest cartel during the time of the American Revolution and into the 19th century. And with the loss of the colonies in North America, the British were desperate to find an alternative source of revenue. And they developed massive opium production in their major colonies in India and used military force to impose the opium trade and opium addiction on the population of China. In the middle of the 19th century, the British East India Company had access to the British Navy, and there were actually two wars fought in China to impose the opium addiction on the Chinese population so that the British East India Company could profit. During that time, a number of big corporations and banks were established, including the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, which became the central clearinghouse bank for that Far East opium trade. And what's happened historically in the 20th century is that that opium war policy has continued, but has broadened to cover almost the entirety of the planet.
Opium has been known in China since the 7th century, and for centuries it was used for medicinal purposes. It was not until the 17th century that a practice of mixing opium with tobacco for smoking was introduced into China by Europeans, particularly the British. Opium trafficked into China had come from the British East India Company's operations in Bengal, British India, produced at its two factories in Patna and Benares. With the drain of silver and a growing number of people becoming victims of a drug, China's Daoguang Emperor demanded action. In 1838, the Emperor sent Lin Zizhu to Guangzhou, where he quickly arrested Chinese opium dealers and summarily demanded that foreign firms turn over their stocks. In response, the British government sent expeditionary forces from India, which ravaged the Chinese coast and dictated the terms of settlement. The Treaty of Nanking not only opened the way for further opium trade, but ceded territory, including Hong Kong, unilaterally fixed Chinese tariffs at a low rate, granted extraterritorial rights to foreigners in China, which were not offered to Chinese abroad, a most favored nation clause, and diplomatic representation. When the court still refused to accept foreign ambassadors and obstructed the trade clauses of the treaties, disputes over the treatment of British merchants in Chinese ports and on the seas led to the Second Opium War and the Treaty of Tientsin. These treaties, soon followed by similar arrangements with the US and France, later became known as unequal treaties, and the Opium Wars represented the start of China's century of humiliation.
The history has been one of warfare by imperial powers of the West, predominantly the British, to impose opium addiction as a form of social control and enormous profits to keep the empire system going and intact. In 2008, when the entire international banking system froze up as the result of the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers and the danger of a collapse of all of the major U.S. banks, the major source of funding to keep those big banks operating was criminal money, primarily drug money. And that's just not my opinion. That was the official statement of Dr. Antonio Maria Costa, who at the time was the head of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So we're talking about a 200-year continuity of opium warfare to fuel the empire's ravenous appetite for money and warfare.
For decades now, Anglo-American secret services, the MI6 and CIA, have been using illegal drug trade money to fund their so-called covert, clandestine, secret operations overseas, from Contras and other rebels in Latin America to Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
The CIA was created in 1947. The Golden Triangle was the center of opium trafficking in the world. Vietnam, Thailand, Laos. This was the hub of global drug trafficking. And the CIA was involved almost from inception, and it stayed involved to this day. It uses drug money to fund its own operations.
Well, one of the best books on the topic, I think, is Heinrich Kruger's The Great Heroin Coup. And he talks about how basically Nixon used the Vietnam War to take over the global drug trade from the French connection, the French mafia. So of course it started out in Southeast Asia and in Laos and Thailand and Burma. They call it Golden Triangle. And during the Vietnam War, huge military conflict. These huge military conflicts seemed to go hand in hand with the movement of drugs. So Hong Kong in that case was used as a global money laundry for the drugs coming out of the Golden Triangle. And of course, during a war, it's much easier to smuggle things. So it's a good cover, for drug trafficking. And throughout this, the CIA, of course, got involved with it, Nixon's CIA. They got involved with Santos Traficante, mobster out of Miami. And he was involved with the Bay of Pigs operation against Castro. And then he also set up operations in Southeast Asia to facilitate the flow of drugs. So it started out there, and of course, even many American GIs became heroin addicts during that conflict. I mean, there was just so many drugs, so much heroin moving out of the Golden Triangle. So after the Vietnam War, lo and behold, 1979 roughly, Reagan starts to finance the Mujahideen in Pakistan. CIA sets up a base in Islamabad. Peshawar becomes the outpost, and the Mujahideen go across the border, instructed by the CIA to go just inside Afghanistan, plant poppies. Basically, that way you always want deniability in the drug trade, so you can blame it then on the Afghan government, who we were fighting against, the Tariqi government, the socialist government of Tariqi. And that's what they did. And so, basically the Mujahideen took over the drug trade. The Pakistani military was deeply involved, along with, of course, the CIA, along with the BCCI Bank, Bank of Credit and Commerce International. And then Dubai became the laundry for this area, which they began to call the Golden Crescent, which is Iran, Pakistan and Afghanistan. And Dubai became the place where the drug money was laundered. And lo and behold, it's the same banks involved, HSBC Bank, the second biggest bank in the world, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation. Now they want you to know them as HSBC because they don't really want you to understand the history. Because of course, this bank was also involved with the Chinese Opium Wars way back in the 1800s when the British first went into China and did the Opium Wars against the Chinese. So HSBC set up in Dubai, along with Standard and Chartered Bank, the other big Hong Kong bank. And now all this Golden Crescent drug money that's being trafficked behind the scenes of another big war, covert operation, is being laundered through Dubai.
The CIA has been accused of money laundering drug funds via the BCCI. The former U.S. Commissioner of Customs, William von Braun, said that when customs agents raided the bank in 1988, they found numerous CIA accounts. The CIA also worked with BCCI in arming and financing the Afghan Mujahideen during the Afghan War against the Soviet Union, using BCCI to launder proceeds from trafficking heroin grown in the Pakistan-Afghanistan borderlands, boosting the flow of narcotics to European and U.S. markets.
In the Afghanistan case, the Mujahideen, who were there fighting the Soviet Union Red Army in Afghanistan, the major source of funding, aside from money provided by the U.S. Congress and by Saudi Arabia, were the proceeds of the heroin and opium trade.
Back in 2000, the Taliban issued a fatwa banning poppy cultivation in Afghanistan, slashing the cultivation and production of opium and heroin, the whereabouts of Zira. Only about 12 acres of land were under cultivation. A year later, he was forced to invade Afghanistan to find Osama bin Laden. What happens is we have poppy cultivation surging back up much higher than pre-occupation levels, right under the boots of tens of thousands of U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan. Today, Afghanistan stands as the number one producer and exporter of heroin. About 90% of the world's heroin comes from Afghanistan.
The Taliban did issue a fatwa against poppy production and heroin trafficking, had kind of cleaned that country up, even though the Taliban were put into power with the blessing of big oil and government of Dubai, government of Saudi Arabia, and the CIA, and all these people. But they did. That was the one thing that, you know, one of the reasons we took the Taliban out was the fact that they issued this fatwa against heroin trafficking, and that's a big money maker for these people.
And one of the main reasons that Washington targeted the Taliban for removal was, when they were in power, they practically eradicated the opium trade. This was a cardinal sin for Washington. It wanted it reactivated. It got rid of it, the Taliban. Opium production boomed. And at least 1 or 2 years in the new millennium, 1 or 2 UN reports, maybe even more than that, said that of the world's global opium production, Afghanistan supplied more than 100% of it. Currently, it's somewhere on the order of over 90%.
In the run-up to the Communist Revolution in China, in order to provide covert funds for the Kuomintang forces loyal to General Chiang Kai-shek, who were fighting the Chinese Communists under Mao Zedong, the CIA helped the KMT smuggle opium from China and Burma to Bangkok and Thailand by providing airplanes owned by one of their front businesses, Air America. Released on April 13, 1989, the Kerry Committee report concluded that members of the U.S. State Department who provided support for the Contras were involved in drug trafficking, and elements of the Contras themselves knowingly received financial and material assistance from drug traffickers.
What Senator Kerry's investigators discovered was that a major source of funding for the Contras in Nicaragua was the fact that there were cocaine traffickers on the payroll of the White House. It was actually not so much the CIA as this White House-based operation associated with then Vice President George Bush, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who was the White House point person for all of the Contra dealings. And there were shiploads and plane loads of cocaine being smuggled into the United States, especially to be converted into crack cocaine to sell in the American ghettos. And those funds were being used to finance the Contras.
In Mexico, according to Peter Dale Scott, the Dirección Federal del Seguridad was in part a CIA creation, and the CIA's closest government allies were for years in the DFS. The DFS badges handed out to top-level Mexican drug traffickers have been labeled by Drug Enforcement Administration agents as a virtual license to traffic. Scott says that the Guadalajara cartel, Mexico's most powerful drug trafficking network in the early 1980s, prospered largely because it enjoyed the protection of the DFS under its chief Miguel Nazar Herrero, a CIA asset.
You also have Operation Fast and Furious, where the Obama administration laundered illegal weapons from the United States into the hands of Mexican drug cartels. And we know that a number of American drug enforcement agents, customs officials, were assassinated using weapons that were given from the Obama administration to top people in the most deadly Mexican drug cartels. This is a shameful episode. Congress found Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for refusing to provide the documentation on this filthy Operation Fast and Furious, in which guns were given to killer drug cartels.
In 1989, the United States invaded Panama as part of Operation Just Cause, which involved 25,000 American troops. General Manuel Noriega, head of the government of Panama, had been giving military assistance to contra groups in Nicaragua at the request of the U.S., which in exchange allowed him to continue his drug trafficking activities, which they had known about since the 1960s.
So I think that, yes, there's been a historical involvement. Back in Vietnam, it was notorious that Air America, a CIA front company, was funneling heroin around the globe to generate revenue to keep the war going. This was a British policy that certain intelligence and Wall Street financial interests inherited from the British and have been pursuing as a British policy line going back to the Opium War.
Ultimately, the City of London runs the whole thing because the City of London is totally deregulated. There's no regulations, there's no financial regulations. Like even on Wall Street, it's been deregulated a lot, but there's no regulation in the City of London. And then you have this series of offshore British protectorates where there's offshore banking, Cayman Islands, Bahamas, Bermuda, Isle of Man, Isle of Jersey, these kinds of places where there's just no transparency. So what happens is all this drug money goes through these big British banks. HSBC has locations everywhere. Standard Chartered is another huge bank that's involved with this. And there's so basically you have oil money coming in from Saudi Arabia. You have arms money coming in from the CIA and the military contractors and shady defense deals with different countries. And you have all this drug money. And that's what my book, Big Oil and Their Bankers, is about. It's about the world's three most valuable commodities, which is guns, drugs, guns, drugs, and oil. And then these things all mingle together, and they call it the euro dollar market, because the euro dollar, all a euro dollar is any currency that's traded in a country other than its own. So when a dollar is traded in Britain, it becomes a euro dollar. When a pound's traded in Panama, it becomes a euro dollar. So there's this huge euro dollar market it's nothing but dirty money.
The international financial system at the very top, the five or six biggest American banks, JP Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and all of the City of London centered banks, plus the banks that operate in offshore safe havens, like the Cayman Islands, like the Jersey and Guernsey Islands right there in the United Kingdom. All of these centers thrive on their ability to launder criminal money into the mainstream of the world banking system through all of the key world banking capitals. Dubai, Qatar, Doha and Qatar, these are also now emerging as major offshore banking centers, so that you've got a global structure top down that allows this criminal enterprise to kill millions and millions of people by drug addiction and by drug-related crime every year. And there is an adamant refusal on the part of the U.S. government, among many governments around the world, to take this problem on, because the financial system in the West is so fragile that they are literally as addicted to drug money as the worst heroin addicts are to heroin, or the worst crack cocaine addicts are to crack. So the drug problem is going to have to be defeated top down, and it starts with the criminalization of the world's biggest Western banks.
Well, thank you for watching. Always follow the money trail with me, Amir Arfa.